Good afternoon. Welcome to Harpers Ferry National Historical Park on this beautiful, beautiful anniversary of the Battle of Harpers Ferry and its relationship to the 1862 Maryland campaign. We're so glad that you came out to see us today and to spend the afternoon with us. It is my honor and pleasure to introduce a friend and colleague, Dennis Fry. As many of you may know, Dennis is the historian here at Harpers Ferry National Historical Park. Dennis is in demand as a writer, lecturer, guide, and preservationist. He has appeared numerous times on PBS, History Channel, Discovery Channel, and A&E as a guest historian. He has helped produce award-winning television features on the Battle of Antietam and abolitionist John Brown. Dennis has written many books and over 77 articles. His most recent books are Harpers Ferry, A Border Town in the American Civil War, and September Suspense, which you're going to hear about this afternoon. And as I was walking out the door of the bookstore, they handed this to me. It's hot off the press, the history and tour guide of Stonewall Jackson's Battle of Harpers Ferry. After his presentation, Dennis will be available to sign books. Dennis and his wife Sylvia reside near Antietam Battlefield in Maryland, where they have restored the home that was used by General Ambrose Burnside as his post-Antietam headquarters. And they share this home with their two Boston Terriers, Mr. Lincoln and Bonnie Blue. It is with a great deal of pleasure that I introduce to you Dennis Fry.
Thank you, Rebecca. What we have happening today, thank you, Rebecca, for giving us this great opportunity to have so many fine rangers working here in the National Park and giving us this production. First of all, this is so exciting for me. I'm good right here. Is this good? Just want to make sure it sounds good, because I was warned if I go in front of these two white things, I'll be pulverized. So that would be ugly. You don't want that to happen today. It's very exciting for me because literally Harpers Ferry, as many of you know, this is my home. I grew up here. I began my Park Service experience here when I was 13, 14 years old. And you can only dream about this opportunity where you can come and be part of something so special, so significant on the date at the moment that something happens. And in this case, 150 years ago. It is just so exciting. So if I get a little passionate about this, I'm not going to apologize. I am passionate about today, about this event. And incidentally, you see a lot of people here that I can't begin to thank all of them by name. But this is a tremendous effort to bring all of this together for you to have this experience. We've been working on this, planning for this for several years. We've been working on coordination and all the details for months. And then to have it all come together in this grand canopy of Harpers Ferry with this beautiful, beautiful weather, is just something that we are very excited about. But I do want to introduce one person who is the coordinator of this event, who makes sure that all the rest of us show up at the right place at the right time to make this happen for you. He is unsung. He will be embarrassed that I'm even going to mention his name, but the person that I want to give a tribute to for organizing, coordinating, and making this special event so special for all of us is our supervisor of our visitor services program, Ranger Todd Bolton. Todd, thank you very much. There he is right there. Thank you, Todd. Very special. We have educational activities, living history activities. We have activities here in the lower town, up on Bolivar Heights. There's plenty to do. And then right on in through this evening, if you stay with us today, we've got the Wildcat Regimental Band, one of the best bands you'll find that do the historical instrumentation and arrangements from the Civil War period. And then, of course, this evening, we have a lecture by the president of Harvard University, Dr. Faust, who will be here. That's a big grab. That's a big steal to have someone like that here. Actually, she's a Shenandoah Valley gal, so for her, it's coming home. She's glad to be with us here in Harpers Ferry this evening. So be here for Dr. Faust. That'll be special. And then there's nothing like Harpers Ferry under moonlight. Well, we don't have any moonlight, so we'll give you lantern light this evening. And so we have a lantern light tour scheduled this evening that will walk through the lower town and talk about and stage for you some of the events that were so significant here 150 years ago. You know, as a historian, when you live in an area, you want to be right at the place at the time that it happened. And this is difficult to do for things that happened in the past. It's been particularly difficult for me over the last few days because things are happening everywhere at the moment. Here at Harper's Ferry, they're happening even at different locations at the same moment. And so I can't be where I want to be every moment that something is happening and say I was there 150 years ago at that time. I did have that experience Thursday at the Naval Battery at 3:30. The Naval Battery is up on Maryland Heights, and at 3:30, those guns that had been blasting away for 9 hours suddenly went silent. And I was there with Ranger Kaz, Ranger Isaac, and about 60 people at the Naval Battery right at 3:30 when that moment happened. And this morning, today, September the 15th, there were two places I wanted to be at the moment. One of them was on the Chambers Farm, which we also refer to as the Murphy Farm. This was the place that Stonewall Jackson sent A.P. Hill to seize the position of the flank of the enemy army on Bolivar Heights. If this doesn't work, Jackson won't succeed, and it's over. This campaign is over. Hill gets up there. The farm's about 2 miles from here. He succeeds. I'm standing there at the cannon. We have reproduction cannon. Just me, the cannon, on the Chambers Farm by myself this morning at 8 a.m. And I read the account of A.P. Hill in his words about what they did that night and that morning. As I was reading the account, something happened that I cannot explain. But I heard in the distance, fife and drum playing. I couldn't see them, but I could hear them. I don't know where they were, but there they were. An hour later, I wanted to be another place at the moment. I wanted to be on Bolivar Heights at the time of the consultation of the Union officers for the surrender, and once again, I'm reading their accounts. As soon as I finished reading the account, closed the book. Another strange thing happened to me this morning. I suddenly heard thunder. I'm looking around. Sky looks like this. There's no dark clouds up there. But I heard thunder. And then I heard boom, 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 boom. And it dawned on me what that was. I was hearing the cannon firing from the Battle of Antietam, the reenactment of the Battle of Antietam that is happening today north of the Antietam battlefield. I heard that on Bolivar Heights right as I was finishing reading about the surrender, the capitulation at Harper's Ferry. And so this day started special, and you being here with me this morning makes, or this afternoon now, makes it even more special. We have a few cavalrymen that didn't escape last night. I thought they all left. You know, one of the great ventures of Harper's Ferry was last night at 8 o'clock, 1,500 Union horsemen, just like that, two by two, here on Shenandoah Street, just that quietly, just that slowly, began going that direction, just as you see today. I did not stage this, incidentally. Heading towards the pontoon bridge in Maryland. They have no idea what's going to happen to them. And that is precisely my point. There is suspense in history. That night, they didn't know if they would succeed or fail. They didn't know what the result of their expedition would be as they were lined up here waiting to leave Harper's Ferry. They're completely surrounded by the Confederates. The rebels are on the high ground to your right, Loudoun Heights on the opposite side of the Shenandoah. Maryland Heights to our front, the Confederates. Everywhere, they're Confederates. To the right, to the left, everywhere in sight, Confederates. But they're going to try to break out in the darkness of that night. They don't know what the result will be. And that's what I tried to do with September suspense, and that's what I want to focus on for just the next few moments. They don't know what's going to happen next. They don't know. We know because we're 150 years later. we can look back on it and say, oh, well, this is what happened. But that's exactly what the problem is with history, in my judgment, is that we examine history from the perspective of, oh, that's what happened. So let's study what happened. No, wait a minute. Human beings don't work that way. Human beings are engaged beings. We're thoughtful beings. This is one thing that makes me a little bit different than Bonnie Blue and Mr. Lincoln, is that they're pretty good thinking animals, but hopefully I have something on them they don't have. And so, you know, for me and for us, life is drama. Sometimes it's very dramatic. Other times it's very boring. But life is drama. History is drama. The only reason we're here today, 150 years later, on these dates is because they made these dates significant. What they did here changed American history. But they don't know what the outcome, what the consequences of what they do will be at that moment. And so you've heard me use those three words quite a bit here over the last bit. At that moment. At that moment. What do they know at that moment? How do they respond at that moment? And so what I want to share here is this, that at the moment in September of 1862, it is very suspenseful. It's very stressful. It's very unknown as to what the consequences are going to be. And let's start with a man that you all know, Abraham Lincoln. Today, Abraham Lincoln doesn't know about what's happened here yet. He hasn't been informed of what's happened at Harper's Ferry at 9 o'clock this morning. He doesn't know. All he knows is Harper's Ferry is surrounded and the situation doesn't look good. What he knows is the Federal Army is en route and a rescue mission, but we don't know if it's going to get there in time. Lincoln is tense. Lincoln is uncertain. In fact, on September the 7th, 8 days ago, the president had Harper's Ferry on his mind. The president was worried about Harper's Ferry because Harper's Ferry has become isolated. There's no way they can get troops here. They can't communicate with the garrison here. The telegraph lines have been cut. The president has 14,000 of his men, his soldiers, out here in the Shenandoah Valley, and he can't do anything for them. He feels desperate, and he is not happy. He's frustrated. Lincoln's day, Lincoln's moment, is a moment of suspense. What will happen to these people? As I was working with September Suspense, living here all my life, something inside me, there was some genetic composition inside me that said, you're going to write a book about this time in history. I didn't know what it would be about. I didn't know what subject it would have, and I did not know what the title would be. But what I did know is that I wanted to do something different than any other of my fellow historians or any of my predecessors. I didn't want to repeat something in my own words that someone else had already researched. So it dawned on me that there's a great source of information out there that very few historians have utilized simply because they haven't been accessible to us as historians. And that is period newspapers. Newspapers of the time are a great way to put yourself in the moment. Think about what you were reading this morning in a newspaper, whether it be about a sporting event that's about to happen today on college football day, or whether it be about some political event that may have some consequence in the election. We don't know. It hasn't happened yet. We don't know the score of today's games yet. And so that's exactly what it was like reading these newspapers from 1862. I spent 2 years getting up in the morning reading 1862 newspapers before I read the modern newspapers. And it gave me this sense, this feel of what was happening for them. And I was able to immerse myself into their time period. If I could do this, I had to divorce myself from what I knew, from the consequence, from the occurrence. The game hasn't been played yet. The snap hasn't occurred. The pitch hasn't happened. And so I was able to do that by immersing myself in 1862 through these newspapers. There's almost 500 footnotes in here. Over 400 of them are from newspapers. And so the exciting thing for me is the suspense built from day to day as I was reading what they were experiencing north and south. And I learned some things that I didn't know. I've been studying this campaign for 40 years, and I learned a lot of things in the newspapers that I just had never known before as I was putting together September Suspense. One of those things that I learned was this. Robert E. Lee, the invasion didn't begin in Maryland. The invasion would begin in Pennsylvania. Lee was going to Pennsylvania. I knew that. But I didn't know it in the same way or in the same sense of feel that we had in September Suspense. Lee was going to Pennsylvania, and in fact, Pennsylvania was convinced Lee was coming into Pennsylvania. Maryland, he was coming only to rescue, to liberate from the oppressors, as they were known, the Lincoln oppressors, those who had occupied Maryland. Maryland, of course, had remained in the Union because the president had imposed martial law. So Lee had come to rescue Maryland from those who had usurped the Constitution of the United States. But the real invasion was going to begin in Pennsylvania. Listen to what the governor of Pennsylvania had to say about the invading forces. It's now September. This is a date that's familiar to you. It's now September the 11th, 1862. You remember your and my September 11th. And as we remember our September 11th, I want you to feel that moment again, that day. What were you feeling at 9:02 a.m. on September the 11th? September 11th, 1862, the governor of Pennsylvania will send this note to the President of the United States. He's talking about the Confederates who are now on the border, 5 miles, Robert E. Lee is, from the Mason-Dixon line. They're going north. And the governor, Curtin, Andrew Curtin, knows they're coming. Quote, this is to the President. Mr. President, their destination is Harrisburg or Philadelphia. Send here not less than 80,000 disciplined troops. Send them now. Order them from New York and states in the East. All available forces here at once. You have a governor telling the president to order troops into his state. He's desperate. You can feel it. Then he goes on. The governor then issues Mr. Lincoln this challenge, and I quote, the time for decided action by the national government has arrived. What may we expect? Now, the president has nobody in Pennsylvania to stop the Confederate Army. There aren't any federal troops in Pennsylvania. The war hasn't been in Pennsylvania. Lincoln's concerned about Washington. He's got nearly 160,000 men in the defenses of Washington, but nobody in Pennsylvania, and that's where the rebel army is. He can't stop them, and he knows it. The governor goes on to say, you must send troops here. It is our only hope to save the North and to crush the rebel advance. Do not suppose for an instant that I am unnecessarily alarmed. The president responds, we're not sending you any troops. We're going to sacrifice Pennsylvania. Now, he doesn't say that. But basically, they can't stop them. Then the governor figures out that he's going to get no help from Washington. There is no help coming from the Capitol. The president cannot assist him or won't assist him at this moment. So he goes to the mayor of Philadelphia. Philadelphia, of course, being the largest city in Pennsylvania. Philadelphia was the second largest city in the United States in 1860. Big population. So the governor goes to the mayor of Philadelphia, and this is what he says on September the 11th. We need every available man immediately. Stir up your population tonight. Form your citizens into companies. Send me 20,000 men tomorrow, September the 12th. No time can be lost in massing a force along the Susquehanna to defend our state. Arouse every man possible and send them here. You can feel this. They are nervous. They are uncomfortable. And let me tell you something. You think it's ridiculous that Lee could go to Philadelphia? Well, it's ridiculous for you not to think that he should go to Philadelphia. Because I learned that Southern newspapers in Georgia, in Alabama, in Mississippi, in South Carolina, and even in Virginia are all hurling Robert E. Lee north. They are demanding that the Confederate Army go into Pennsylvania, and they are demanding that the Confederate Army go to Philadelphia and negotiate peace, independence in Philadelphia, in Independence Square. You grab the symbolism. You understand the symbolism. And so, were there any defenses around Philadelphia? None. Were there any troops to defend Philadelphia? None. Were there any gunboats on the rivers to defend Philadelphia? None. Lee had an open path to Philadelphia. And the Yankees weren't there to stop him. Now, you know none of this happened because you know history. They didn't make it to Philadelphia. Lee didn't negotiate terms of peace in Independence Square. Why? What happened? You can summarize it in two words. Harper's Ferry. And I'm not being melodramatic. Harper's Ferry crushes the intentions and motivations of Robert E. Lee's Army of Northern Virginia as it was heading north in September of 1862, Harper's Ferry. And how does Harper's Ferry do that? We do it this way. They do it this way. These people here, the Union garrison, almost 14,000, are ordered to remain here. They're not permitted to depart. They receive, in fact, instructions. Actually, I'll share the instructions. I'm not going to paraphrase them. I'll just share them with you. They receive instructions. And I quote, "Be energetic and active. Defend all places to the last extremity. There must be no abandoning of a post, and you will shoot the first man that thinks of it." And then also they receive these orders. "Have your wits about you. Do all you can to annoy the rebels. Activity, energy, and decision should be used. You will not abandon Harper's Ferry without defending it to the last extremity." So the Yankees have their orders. Colonel Miles has his instructions, the commander here. But Lee is baffled. Why would they hold Harper's Ferry? When Robert E. Lee came north, Harper's Ferry was not part of the equation. Lee never looked at the map and said, "I intend to attack Harper's Ferry. We are going to make our goal, our mission, Harper's Ferry." No, no, no. Lee's going to Pennsylvania. That's not Harper's Ferry. Lee's leaving Virginia. Harper's Ferry's in Virginia in 1862. Harper's Ferry's in the Confederacy in 1862. He's not interested in attacking Harper's Ferry. But now he must, because these people don't move. Lee's here at Frederick, 20 miles from here. Look at my hands, north this way. Now he's got 14,000 men behind him to his rear in the Valley of Virginia, and Robert E. Lee cannot open his line of supply and communication into Pennsylvania as long as these Federals remain a blockade. And so Lee, instead of going to Pennsylvania north, which where you're focused is that way, 37 miles from here is Pennsylvania, Lee's only 5 miles from Pennsylvania. Remember that on September 11th. Lee decides that he must eradicate the Harper's Ferry problem for him to continue his invasion into Yankee land. And so on September the 9th, he comes up with special orders. What were they? Boy, what isn't that chorus? 191. Absolutely. You all know special orders 191. He comes up with special orders 191. He divides his army at Frederick, which is this direction, 20 miles. And he sends three columns to Harper's Ferry to seize that mountain, to seize the mountain that's this direction, and to seize a mountain behind you a few miles. He's going to trap the Confederates, are going to trap the Federals in the hole of that triangle, where you are in the triangle, in the middle of the hole, and Harper's Ferry will be wiped out. And then Lee will have his line of supply open, and he can continue his invasion. Very simple. Chooses Stonewall Jackson to make it happen, even better because this place Jackson knows. This was his first command of the Civil War at Harper's Ferry. He's familiar with this place. Lee's best commander is being sent to Harper's Ferry to bring about the end of the Harper's Ferry garrison. But what happens is this. Lee couldn't have predicted this. Jackson couldn't have anticipated this. The Yankees don't quit. They don't give up just because the Confederates come. They actually stand and they fight. And Jackson gets behind schedule, 1 day behind schedule, 2 days behind schedule, 3 days behind schedule. Jackson's late. Lee now, still at Hagerstown on September the 13th, South September 14th, suddenly hears from his cavalry that enemy is aggressively advancing against him from your right to your left, coming from the east from Washington towards Lee here in the Valley of Virginia and in the Cumberland Valley. Lee ultimately says, Pennsylvania must wait. I must go back and save Jackson at Harper's Ferry. I must bring my army back together again. And so as a result of that, Lee departs the Pennsylvania line, comes back to South Mountain, fights in the gaps of South Mountain, gives Jackson more time for Harper's Ferry to surrender. Ultimately, today, at 9 o'clock this morning, today, Jackson succeeds. Harper's Ferry falls. It surrenders. A great triumph for the Confederates, but a great failure, a great strategic failure for Robert E. Lee and the Confederate Army. Because you're not at the Pennsylvania line anymore. You're back on the Potomac River. You're not facing north any longer. You're turned south towards Virginia. You're not going to Philadelphia. You're going to Shepherdstown and Martinsburg and back into Virginia. Lee had had to completely reverse his course. Lee, at this moment, today, September 15th, right now, is that direction, air miles from here, about 10 miles, a place called Sharpsburg. Lee, right now, at this moment, still plans to retreat from Maryland. There will be no battle along the Antietam Creek. But sometime between 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock today, 150 years ago, on September the 15th, 1862, you're living the moment right now. Some point during this hour, a courier arrives riding from Harper's Ferry bearing a message from General Jackson to Robert E. Lee. And that message will say, and I paraphrase, from Jackson to Lee. Remember now, Harper's Ferry to Sharpsburg. Through God's blessing, Jackson always, always gave credit to his creator. Through God's blessing, Harper's Ferry and its garrison has surrendered. And with that, my friends, the course of history changes. Robert E. Lee, instead of continuing his retreat back into Virginia, ending the invasion, ending the campaign, Lee decides to stay at Sharpsburg and wait. Not give battle to the enemy. No. Lee's not thinking about giving battle to the enemy today along the Antietam Creek. That is not correct. But what he is thinking about is, two-thirds of my army is at Harper's Ferry. I need to have it join me. Then we will continue the invasion. The distance from Sharpsburg to the Pennsylvania line is 15 miles. He can still go north. So Harper's Ferry has surrendered. Jackson receives orders to race to the north. And at midnight on September 16th, 12:01 a.m., 12 hours from now, Jackson's men will begin marching from Harper's Ferry to join Lee at Sharpsburg. As you know, September 17th, there will be a battle. Lee had no choice. He was trapped there. That battle absolutely ended all hope for Lee's continued invasion of the North. But my friends, if you don't recall anything else, I hope you'll remember this, that in the suspense of September of 1862, they didn't know what was going to happen from moment to moment. Decisions will be made, and they don't know those outcomes. You can feel the suspense today, 150 years later. You can sense it. Lee has gone from desperation to hope. Jackson has gone from failure to victory. Colonel Miles has gone from holding on and help's coming perhaps to death. But none of them know what that next second will bring. And that's the suspense of life. As you ponder today in this moment and you walk these grounds, these hallowed grounds that these soldiers would fight upon and sacrifice upon, always remember that in September of 1862, 150 years ago, the United States was never in greater or graver danger of becoming a permanent divided states. This is the nadir of President Lincoln's presidency. Never did the future look so bleak. They don't know about Antietam. They don't know there's going to be an Emancipation Proclamation as a result of Antietam and Harper's Ferry. It hasn't happened yet. September suspense, right now, 150 years ago. Thank you all very much. I have no idea what time it is. 12:30? Okay, I can take some questions. Anybody have a question for me? And don't be bashful. Yes, sir. And I'll repeat the question so everybody can hear it. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask about the retreat from the cavalry.
Yes. The question is about the retreat of the cavalry, or I'm going to call it the advance of the cavalry. Just did a little different perspective there. The advance of the cavalry rather than the retreat of the cavalry. And that's how they saw it. They didn't see it as a retreat. They saw this as an offensive operation. They saw this as a breakout. Think of it this way. Miles is completely surrounded. He's got no communication with the outside world. Total isolation. He knows nothing about where his people are. And so he could send a few people out now and then and hope that they might be able to get a messenger out and break out of this noose. But if he tries it with 1,500 and they're just going to bust his way through, break his way through with those 1,500 cavalry, then perhaps he will succeed in getting a message to the United States government somewhere that I need help. This is my situation. Come quickly. And so as those cavalry lined up that night, they were dressed as those gentlemen were. They were dressed in blue. There was really no confusion here about their uniforms. They break out because the Confederates have abandoned Maryland Heights up here, the big mountain that overlooks the Potomac River. There aren't any rebels up there. You go out here and look at the cliffs, there aren't any rebels there. There are no rebels on any of the mountain that you can see up here because they're in big trouble. The Federal Army is only 6 miles away. The Confederate commander in this sector, Lafayette McClaws, will take his men and move them to the north to stop that problem. Colonel Miles doesn't know it. He could have walked everybody out of here that night. Everybody. He doesn't know that. And so the cavalry get out. What you're specifically talking about happened at Williamsport, Maryland. At Williamsport, the Federal cavalry now, they've been out of here for about 4 hours, 5 hours, and they run across a wagon train as they're heading north. They run across a wagon train, which is a Confederate wagon train, at about 4:30 a.m. in the morning. It is dark. The rebels don't expect any Yankees there. They think it's their own cavalry. And so what they do is they turn the train around and they start marching it north under Union escort. And so the one bright spot out of this is not only does the Federal cavalry escape, but it captured General Longstreet's reserve ammunition train and took all those wagons north of the Mason-Dixon line with them. But Colonel Miles didn't know this, and in fact, the Federal cavalry had little effect on the outcome. They were not able to communicate with the Federal Army to any extent that they could hurry things up, and poor Miles just didn't know that only 6 miles this direction, 6 miles from us, is 12,000-man rescue force that's on the way but hasn't quite yet arrived. So, yep, they caught the enemy wagon train in the darkness and sent it north with them to Greencastle, Pennsylvania. Very heroic, very daring, and one of those great moments in history that didn't change history. Yes, sir.
Did the cavalry know that Lee was in force to their north in the direction they were headed?
Very likely. Very likely they knew there were Confederates everywhere. Their whole world had turned rebel. Everywhere they looked, there were rebels. They knew that probably not all the Confederate Army was here. And, of course, the belief was by most in the Federal Army at that time that the Confederate Army was perhaps as many as 120,000 men. Now, federal reports talk about as many as 40,000 here. There never were 120,000 men in Lee's army, ever. Historians still love to debate rebel numbers in this campaign, point being that Lee probably had about 45,000 men. Now, some of my companions will disagree with me, but I feel very comfortable about 45,000. I think Lee had about 30,000 here under Longstreet, or under Jackson, pardon me. And so the thing about that is you're outnumbered. You're outnumbered here about 30,000, 28,000 to 30,000 to 14,000, 2-1. This is one of the few times during the Civil War where the United States Army is outnumbered by the rebel army. That almost never happened. Here it happens. So not only is Colonel Miles isolated, has no communication, doesn't know there's any reinforcements coming, but he is outnumbered 2-1, and the rebels are on the high ground. No wonder he surrenders today. Now, 3 hours ago, 3.5 hours ago. Yes, sir.
You noted that Jackson was frustrated for a couple of days by not being able to take Harper's Ferry on schedule. What would have happened had he failed to take Harper's Ferry?
The question is, Jackson is frustrated. He is behind schedule. And what would have happened had he failed to take Harper's Ferry? I can tell you. I mean, and I don't have to be judgmental about this. Lee's going back to Virginia. The campaign's over. Lee's canceled the invasion. In fact, on last night at 10 o'clock, I read an order that Lee sent out at 10 o'clock last night. And what the order says is this. It was going to Jackson. It was going to Lafayette McLaws, his subordinate up here in Maryland, right on Maryland Heights in that area. This is what it says, and I quote, I know this one by heart. The day has gone against us. Now, let me repeat that. The day has gone against us. Robert E. Lee never had said anything like that. Never. He never had a day go against him. It's a metaphor, too. He's not only talking about that day, Sunday, September 14th, yesterday. He's talking about the campaign. The whole thing has exploded. It's blown up. Nothing's going right. We're supposed to be in Pennsylvania, and I'm stuck at Harper's Ferry. And it's not going well there either. My army is in a quagmire. And it's separated. It's split. And so, no question. The next sentence is this. The day has gone against us. This army will go by way of Sharpsburg and cross the river. He has already ordered a retreat on the night of September the 14th, and that's when there is a courier. The couriers pass each other and don't know they pass each other. My friend Scott Hartwick, had a good line the other night. The communications at this time are exactly the same as they were in the time of Alexander the Great. Think about that. They've got no telegraph. Everything is being communicated by courier, written courier messages. And so, sometime during the night of the 14th, 15th, two couriers pass each other. One's coming from Lee to Jackson saying, abandon the mission, it's over, the invasion's finished. One's going from Jackson to Lee saying, I'm hopeful. Tomorrow, I'm going to finish this thing. So they pass in the night. Lee receives Jackson's message along the Antietam Creek, and he stops the retreat. He decides, I'm going to give Jackson one more last chance this morning, September 15th. I'm going to give him a few hours today before noon. See what happens. If I don't hear word from them by noon or about this time, we're going back home. We're going to Virginia. Campaign over. So Harper's Ferry directly influences Robert E. Lee's decision to make the stand at Antietam. But he wasn't making a stand. He's waiting. Because, remember now, two out of every three Confederates are down here, so what he needs to do is bring his army back together again at Sharpsburg, and then he's going to move 15 miles north of Pennsylvania. The Army's taped back together, away we go. That's the plan. So no question, no question. If Jackson had not succeeded this morning, this campaign is over and Lee's back in Virginia. No battle of Antietam would have ever occurred. Yes, sir. I'll repeat it for you. Union troops were paroled. Yeah, close to Baltimore. What happened to the prisoners is a what happened to the prisoners is often a question we receive. There's a lot of them that are captured here. In essence, Stonewall Jackson wipes out an entire Yankee corps, 12,700 men. Incidentally, I've been studying Stonewall Jackson for 50 years, and Jackson gets virtually no credit for what he accomplishes here. But 12,700 United States soldiers become prisoners of war. A prisoner is a casualty, by military terms. And so what Jackson does here is what Napoleon said is the ultimate in victory. Napoleon said the greatest victory comes, I'm paraphrasing, the greatest victory comes at the least loss. Jackson captures 12,700 men. Total loss on the Confederate side, about 300. It's the most lopsided Confederate victory of the American Civil War. So what happens to the prisoners? They're not going to a prison. There had been an agreement that had been developed between the United States and Confederate States armies about a month prior to this. And in that agreement, it was this: you become my prisoner, I will parole you. And if I parole you, you will not fight until you're exchanged for one of my men. So it's a trade. Don't fight until you're traded. It's kind of like taking a baseball player and putting him on the bench because you're going to trade him. And so it's a very interesting way to deal. It's kind of like taking a baseball player and putting him on the bench because you're going to trade him. And so it's a very interesting way to deal with prisoners, and this was the first big test of the Dix Hill Cartel, as it was known. And so these prisoners would be paroled by regiment, 125th Regiment Infantry, New York, 126th New York, 115th New York, 111th New York, 12th New York State Militia, 32nd Ohio, 87th Ohio, 60th Ohio, 1st Maryland Potomac Home Brigade, 3rd Maryland Potomac Home Brigade, and the cavalry was out of here. But they're going in 9th Vermont. All these men are going to be paroled. They're going to march across the pontoon bridge into Maryland without Confederate escort because they've given their honor. They will not fight again for the United States Army. You think George McClellan could have used nearly 13,000 men in his army that were only a few miles from him? Uh-uh. Paroled prisoners. And so they marched from here to Frederick, from Frederick to Annapolis, to a place called Parole, Maryland, still there today, called Camp Parole. And it's there at Camp Parole that these men would ultimately be distributed either to go home or out to Chicago for a while to Camp Douglas. Ultimately, they'll all be exchanged, and ultimately, many of these men who fight here and surrender here will end up fighting at Gettysburg on the second and third day at Cemetery Hill and will fight the same men who captured them. This time, it's a different outcome. The men here would be branded, terrible brand, the cowards of Harper's Ferry. They weren't cowards. They never were cowards. But they were known as the cowards of Harper's Ferry in the Army. Gettysburg removed that awful stain forever as they redeemed themselves on July 2nd and July 3rd, 1863. Yes, ma'am. You're on.
Did the Confederates leave some of their army here to hold on to Harper's Ferry?
Absolutely. Had to.
This place, how long did they stay?
This place was full of supplies. Artillery, just lots of things the Confederate Army needed was here. Even mules. They captured 1,200 mules. Now, that might not sound like a whole lot to you, but think about that. Six mules takes one wagon, so you just captured enough mules to move 200 wagons. That's enough to move sustenance for an entire Army Corps. So 1,200 mules, on and on and on, they captured. Yes. They're all being sent to Winchester. They're not going north with Lee to Pennsylvania. Everything captured here will be sent to Winchester. Sent to Winchester, which is Lee's base of operations for the invasion, and they leave Confederates behind to do that. Those they left behind are A.P. Hill. Jackson leaves Hill's men behind to give them extra rest, to allow them to do this, to parole the prisoners, to get the material out of here. It's kind of a congratulatory award for A.P. Hill for bringing about the final surrender. And Hill's men are here on the morning of September 17th, and Lee will send an urgent message to them, come to Sharpsburg, I need you. And they will ultimately end up at Sharpsburg just in time to save Lee's army from destruction. Final question, and I'm going to give it to my friend Eileen, stand up for a moment. This young lady, did I compliment you?
Thank you.
You're certainly welcome. This young lady is from South Carolina. She has an ancestor who fought in this battle, two ancestors that fought in this battle that were South Carolina troops. They fought on Maryland Heights. One of them was shot in the head and survived. That's her direct ancestor. The other one, who was an uncle, was shot and did not survive.
And this is his descendant.
Oh, okay. Oh, very good. Nice to meet you.
This is Joe Bones.
Hi, Joe. Hi. Welcome. What's your question?
My question
was, and I'll repeat it. Oh, there you go. You get to be on the mic.
Oh, yeah.
Don't give me a lecture. Just give me a question.
A quick question. What if Lee, if Jackson had gotten here on time, what might have happened?
If General Jackson, thanks you, Eileen, and you all need to come up and shake the hands of these folks, actual descendants of the battle. Anybody else descendants? We got others descendants? Lots of descendants. Okay, good. Yes, what regiment?
Fifth New York Heavy Artillery.
There we go. Company F, Maryland Heights. They're firing the cannon at the South Carolina troops. Now that's true American. There we go. That's what it's all about. Bring us back together 150 years ago. Enemies 150 years ago today, friends today. Thank you very much. Glad you're here. Welcome. Stop by the Naval Battery if you get a chance. Very good. If Jackson had been on time, I have no question. If Jackson had succeeded and not been delayed, if the Federals had cooperated, I'll put that in quotation marks, and not delayed Jackson, not fought Jackson, surrendered as they were supposed to, Robert E. Lee would have gone into Pennsylvania. He would have caused havoc in Pennsylvania. It would have been a disaster for Abraham Lincoln. It would have been complete disaster for the Republican Party, who likely would have lost the elections, in the congressional elections of September of 1862, very likely, because the Republicans would have looked like imbeciles, and Lincoln himself, the biggest one of all, for not being able to stop the enemy in home territory, Pennsylvania, Yankee land. And the consequences of all that would have been dire for the North. That's what I mean, that at no other time during the Civil War was the Confederacy in a position to achieve independence as it is right now. And as I write in September Suspense, the future of the United States is in the hands of Robert E. Lee, who is not fighting for the United States. The only reason Lee doesn't make it to Pennsylvania is Harper's Ferry. Well, thank you all again. Been a great pleasure. Thank you for being at Harper's Ferry here for the 150th commemoration. We have a great bookstore, a nonprofit that supports the National Park. They've got a lot of things for sale over here, many different authors that are here today. Next up, the panel discussion. So if you want to support the park, buy a book. Thank you. You don't have to buy my book. Just buy somebody's book.